This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, we make a difference. We have with us two very interesting guests, two young Palestinian activists that work in solidarity with the Jewish Voice for Peace. From East Jerusalem, Mira Debit, an activist with the Right of Education campaign and an alumni of Birzeit University in Ramallah, as well as Hanna Kassis, who received his undergraduate degree from Birzeit and is pursuing a master's degree there. They're here to share with American students, academia, and the American people at large through shows like ourselves and on school campuses their experiences of living and struggling to educate themselves under Israeli occupation, where many of their human rights, including the right to education, are being denied them. Hello, Mira. Hello, Hanna.
Hello.
How are you both?
How are you? Good, good. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight. Hi, Hanna.
Hello.
Mira, can you tell us briefly about your association with the Jewish Voice of Peace, for Peace?
Well, the Jewish Voice for Peace organization, when they were looking for speakers to do the tour, they thought that the best way to, or a way to get it across to students was to introduce them to other Palestinian students. So we were asked to come by Jewish Voice for Peace through the Right to Education campaign at Birzeit University. And so this is the basic communication that we've had, and since then being with them here in the United States.
And they're hosting you, and you are staying with them, of course, which is a very kind service for them.
Yes, yes, it's very humbling. It's very nice.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. People often say, Mira and Hanna, how bad is it really under occupation for students on a regular basis? Can you tell us or describe a typical day for a university student under occupation?
Yeah, sure. Even though our time was a little bit harder than it is now. For example, I started off in 2001, and that's when Intifada was still starting up. So it was impossible for students at that time to get to universities without having to go through a checkpoint, without having to walk through the humiliating process of being checked and having guns pointed at us and staying in the sun for hours. The roads where the checkpoints were set up, most of them were bulldozed, so the terrain was really rough, and no cars were allowed to pass through, I mean, not even ambulances. So the students were constantly harassed, especially during the final exams and the midterm exams. And if the students were able to reach the university, then military jeeps, Israeli military jeeps, would come around to the gates, shoot the sound bombs or gas bombs into the campus, and there was curfews all over the place. So, I mean, even when students were able to reach the university and reach their classes, they'd be worried they wouldn't be able to get back home, or worried about family members or friends in cities that were fully occupied, but there was incursions. So it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all.
And I mean, to look at the Gaza situation, Gaza has been under very strong siege for the past few years. That, one of the main universities in Gaza, the Islamic University, was hit with six separate airstrikes onto the university. It was completely destroyed, and another eight universities were damaged. 66 schools were damaged in the Gaza Strip, and many, many people were killed and civilians. And until now, their construction material is not allowed in for the rebuilding of these academic institutions. Neither are chairs or desks or papers, and for a time there, it was ink was not allowed in either. So what you could say is that you know, it's very bad in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem with the checkpoints, with the apartheid wall that has been built since 2002. But despite all this, I think people are still maintaining the idea and the passion to get an education. So I think that's very good because the Palestinian people have found it to be a very strong tool. So as Hannah said, you know, and during our time, just having to wake up at 6 in the morning to get to class at 10, because you had to cross the checkpoint, you never knew when it was closed or when it was open, was a real adventure. It was a real struggle. But I think many people try to overlook this in order to get their education.
I have a great friend that is a big proponent, advocate, and fundraiser for Birzeit University. Has been, because he was a graduate of Birzeit University many, many moons ago. His name is Mr. Ajloni. Now, one of the things that I know, Birzeit University was closed during one period of time for over 4 years due to the occupation. Is that true?
That's very true. All of the academic institutions were closed. It wasn't just Birzeit, but I think it hit Birzeit the hardest because a lot of the leadership of the First Intifada came from Birzeit University. The students were the ones to lead the masses into that uprising. But it is very true. I mean, people that were first-year students in 1987 ended up graduating in 1993 or 1994. The university was closed for 4 years. During the Second Intifada, it was closed for weeks at a time or months at a time. It didn't reach, it wasn't as bad as it was during the First Intifada, when even nurseries were closed and elementary schools were closed. And so students at that time in the university, or university students, got their education other places like mosques, churches, community centers, social clubs, cultural clubs, wherever they could, in people's homes. And whoever was caught with a book at that time would be arrested by the occupation authorities. So they didn't have it easy at that time. It was even harder than it was for us during our time. But what we see after a while is that it is continuous. It happens to every generation, almost. For me,
these are generational assaults on the education of an entire collective of human beings.
Exactly. I mean, I entered the first grade or the nursery school in first grade. It was the First Intifada, and I graduated high school and finished my BA degree during the Second Intifada. So you can see, I mean, it's continuous. It doesn't stop. And from the moment we are aware of our surroundings in this world until the day we die, we are constantly bothered by the occupation.
But I think like the idea of blocking education is a way that the occupation needs to keep people ignorant. It's a way to keep them down, and if people don't know their rights, then they will not demand them. So it's actually systematic. It's a systematic way of keeping people away from what is knowledge and what is education, because if they have that, they would be able to be stronger, and they're a stronger force in defending their human rights and you know, the validity of their existence, which Israel is constantly trying to erase.
Well, one of the things, too, a lot of students are being detained in Israeli prisons right now. Some of the statistics here, and they can be found on, for those, anybody that's interested in looking this up, on the Birzeit University website, the R2E fact sheet, the Right of Education campaign. Currently incarcerated, there are 87 students, 47 of whom have yet to be found guilty of any charge. 41 were sentenced, 17 are awaiting trial, plus 8 released on bail. There are 8 in administrative detention and 13 under interrogation. Now, unfortunately, one of the problems that happens here is there is a mental persecution that has been documented, and the mental severing caused by not knowing grounds for detention can amount to torture as defined under the UN Convention Against Torture, which was ratified by Israel in 1991. So they know and they agree that this is considered torture, and they still do it anyway, and they get away with it, unfortunately. And why do they get away with it, Mira Hanna? Why do they get away with it?
Well, I think if you look at Israel, Israel is the bully of the Middle East, and it's being protected by the United States, which is an even bigger bully politically. And looking at the young people, looking at the young prisoners who are in Israeli jails at the moment, who maybe one or two people are being arrested on a daily basis, especially in the Jerusalem area in Silwan or in Sheikh Jarrah area in East Jerusalem, protecting their homes from being demolished or protecting their families. Israel has not seen this as they are looked at. They are dehumanized. They were able to dehumanize an entire population. So if a Palestinian is going into jail, and we could look for the past from the beginning of the years of occupation, Palestinians have been to jail, they've been traumatized, they've spent years and years in administrative detention, or and these people have come out completely different. These people have come out traumatized with mental disorders, many with physical disorders, and these people who were once normal human beings were no longer able to continue their lives. And I think Israel thinks if you do this to the young people, then, again, it's a way of holding them, keeping them down. If you try to resist me, I will imprison you. I will take your life away. And it's being done to a lot of the Palestinian youth. One-third of of men in Palestine have been arrested at a certain time in their lives. So,
in doing the research for our show tonight, I ran across this figure that 750,000 people, many of them students and children, have been incarcerated by Israel during the occupation. That is almost one-fifth of the population of the Palestinian territories has been at one time or another incarcerated by Israel. One-fifth of a nation's population. I'm sure they're every single last one of them terrorists, right?
Well, it's not just one-fifth of the population. You have to see that right now the youth are 70% of the population. So when they get older, it's going to be a lot more than one-fifth of the population.
Exactly.
What they try to portray on the news is that, yeah, we're dealing with terrorism, we're dealing with this Islamic extremists or fundamentalists. And that's not the case. That's how they want to portray it, because it's easy to put it that way, and they play on people's prejudices that way. Our problem is not just occupation, it's colonization. It's imperialism at its best, and it's oppression and an occupation. It's not a religious war, how it's portrayed to be on the news sometimes. It's not Muslims against Jews or Jews against Christians. It is a white race from Europe that came over and took land from indigenous people. That's all it was back then, and it's all it is right now.
And now it's about
the best
stealing
way to get
land.
Away with it is to call us terrorists, just like the European settlers called the Native Americans here savages. Mm-hmm. To get people to fear them, to get people to hate them. That's exactly what the Zionists are doing to us, is just calling us terrorists and calling us barbarians. It's no different. It's just demonizing the indigenous population of a colonized country.
And if you look at it, Israel has been trying for many years, since its creation, to maintain a facade of the Jewish state, the democratic state, the only democracy in the Middle East. But it's built on the complete repression and oppression of another people who were already on the land. And as Hannah said, you know, this is not a religious war. This is not a war between faiths. It's a war between, it's not even a war. It's a relationship of oppressor versus the oppressed. And unfortunately, the media centers, the newspapers, and the politicians will continuously try to reinforce the idea that the Palestinians are terrorists, or they are victims, and nobody sees, they're not allowing the Palestinian people to be seen as human beings who are just demanding their freedom and their rights like anyone else in the world. And this is our biggest problem, that Israel has managed to normalize the occupation internationally.
it not only normalized it, I was pretty astounded when I, you know, unfortunately, as an activist in this country for the Palestinian cause for the last 20 years, one of the things that I have found was that I was almost at for some period of time in a cocoon of non-awareness. It was like I was aware of the conflict. I was aware of the problems. I understood it, but the people that I associated with understood alongside me. They were in solidarity with me, whether they were Palestinians, American activists, Jewish activists. They were in solidarity with me, and they understood me. So what ended up happening is I had a very skewed idea as an activist in this country of how people outside of activism actually viewed the occupation and viewed myself as a Palestinian. I had always been accepted as a Palestinian. I knew that there was this problem. I knew that as an activist I had to deal with it. But because my associations were for the most part normalized in solidarity with me, I was totally dumbfounded when I found out that everybody hated us. There's no way. this can't be happening. People can't hate us. All the people I know love me. And, you know, here it was very surprising for me. But it was very important that I understand that and be able to step out of myself. Because only when you accept the totality of the reality that exists can you go on to actually establish a solution. You have to know the fullness of the problem. You have to know the totality of the problem. And until then, I was not an effective activist.
But it's not only that. I mean, you have to look at the different aspects. I mean, a part of our tour as well as Palestinian youth is to come and show what the Palestinian youth is. We are educated. We are enlightened people who are trying to make a difference for our country and for the world. And unfortunately, as you said, when people think of the Palestinians, all they see is these images of stone throwers or what Israel may call terrorists or people who are speaking a language that sounds harsh or Muslims. So this whole war on Islam and this whole war on our existence as human beings.
Okay.
I think if people took more time to sort of understand who are the Palestinians, why are they, what's happening in that region, and just take, you know, 15 minutes to read a book, that could be an option.
Or they could just look at a picture of a little kid throwing a rock at a bulletproof.
You know, we're having some sound issues here, Hanna and Mira. We're going to take a short break and see if we can work those out.
All right, great.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the world food program.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. All are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live. where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Forever Fresh Disposable Undergarments offers a convenient, economic option to men and women who suffer from minor incontinence. Forever Fresh is a patented, internationally award-winning brand that allows the skin to breathe as naturally and comfortably as cotton garments. Environmentally friendly and hypoallergenic, the undergarment features a built-in incontinent pad pocket to be used when extra absorbency is needed. Forever Fresh is available at participating Walgreens. To learn more, you may also visit foreverfresh.com.
This land is your land. This land is mine.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, here on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhat with The People Speak Radio Show, and our guests tonight, Mira DeBeat and Hanna Kassif. Are on tour in the United States with the Right of Education campaign sponsored by the Jewish peace
Voices
group
for peace.
Called Jewish Voice for Peace. And thank you. I hope our sound problems have worked themselves out. That's the pitfalls of live radio, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. You know, let me ask you, Hanna, I know that I've heard that and read in a lot of instances if you belong to a student organization on campus, you can be arrested and held indefinitely. What happens? Are there lawyers that are working on behalf of these students?
There are lawyers. Birzeit University has a lawyer, and the Right Education Campaign used that lawyer, the same person, for cases of the detainees. A lot of the time when these allegations are made, there is no true basis for the allegations. They just say that belonging to a student organization is illegal, even though that's not written in the laws. But even if it was written in the laws, every Palestinian student has a right to be in a student organization. Every student worldwide has a right to be in a student organization. But it's just another way to make it harder for Palestinians to get an education. And if they did get an education, they want Palestinians to stay away from any organization while they're getting an education. They don't want them to be in groups or to talk about any of our realities. So it's just a way to scare students away from that part of the college life. And like you were saying before, a lot of the students are in administrative detention, and what that means is that they're arrested, but there aren't any allegations. There isn't any proof to anything that they have done. So it's just the students are being detained because the occupation authority assumed that these people have done something wrong, even though they haven't. So they keep them in jail, and they're guilty until proven guilty. And when that goes to a court case, when they say that a Palestinian is in court, an Israeli court, what they don't mention is that the judge himself or herself is a military person. The judges in these illegitimate courts are military people, so there is no fairness in their legal system.
So there's no fairness and there's no winning?
Democracy.
And let me ask you, this is something that I've always known that the occupation discourages any entrance into occupied territories at all and encourages people to go out. In 2004, Israel had prohibited Palestinian residents from Gaza from studying in the West Bank. And in 2006, the ruling of the Israeli High Court forbade 10 Palestinians from accessing Bethlehem University to study occupational therapy. And the argument used by the state was that they were once they were given permits to leave, they would become information carriers. So what they would do would be to force people out of the country, out of Palestine, to go study abroad and then make it more difficult for them to come back in, thereby refusing entry to people that legally should be able to come back into their country and come back home after university.
Right, right.
And that
happened a lot during my time in university. A lot of people, a lot of students I knew, left after 2001 and finished their education in the United States or Cyprus or anywhere else. But these are the ones that were fortunate enough to leave, and these are the ones that their families can help them out. The rest of the Palestinian student population can barely afford getting an education at home. They can't go out and get it in other places. And what's more unfortunate is that a lot of these students that left Palestine when they were 19 or 20 or 18 years old found life outside of the occupied territories, like in the States or anywhere else, a lot easier than life back home. They didn't have to go through checkpoints to get to school. They didn't have to see weapons every day of their lives. They didn't have to see tanks or military jeeps rolling past their houses. So a lot of them didn't come back and just wanted to live in dignity. But unfortunately, the only way to live in dignity is to not live at home. And that's another problem that they've caused.
And not only that, I mean, other than taking the education of the students of Gaza, you can't come to the West Bank to study, which is quite funny, I suppose, or ironic that they want to have a two-state solution, which is based on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, but at the same time, students and people from Gaza cannot enter the West Bank until now, and people from the West Bank have not been able to enter Gaza.
But they're going to give them a two-state solution.
And this is a two-state solution. But if you, but also the students of Gaza at the moment, a lot of students have gotten scholarships to go and study. Tens of students have gotten scholarships to go and study in the U.S. or in the United Kingdom or anywhere in the world, but are not allowed to leave their country. They cannot leave Gaza to get these scholarships, these awards for good studentships, and because they can't leave Gaza. And if they do leave, they probably will not be allowed to come back in. Therefore, these students never leave Gaza. And even if they get to leave eventually or have a chance to leave, they're too late to get their scholarship. They're 2 weeks or 2 months late, and they lose it. So it is systematic, it is problematic, and I think, you know, people in Palestine is a very small country. And for people to be denied to go and come as they please in the West Bank alone, at some point there were about 500 to 600 checkpoints. So every 2 to 3 kilometers, you would have to be stopped and searched. Because no matter where you were going, your school books were checked, your clothes were checked, you know, especially for the older generations, the older men and women who are being stopped by 18-year-old soldiers who are telling them to take their trousers down or to take their headscarf off and just to be checked. I don't see where the security part is in that, rather than humiliating these people and taking away their self-respect. So it is a very, very hard situation for people who are trying to find a sense of peace and a sense of freedom in that situation.
And let me go back to the students in jails, in occupation jails. They're not allowed to even receive books from the outside. For example, I tried to get in some books to my little brother who is in an Israeli jail at the moment. And they refused to let them in several times. So, I mean, they don't want them to get an education in the university, and when they're in jail, they're not allowed to receive any books from the outside, not just university books. So they want to try to keep the Palestinian students as uneducated as possible, whether they're in jail or if they're
what he is being charged with?
He's being charged with belonging to a student organization in 2008, even though he had graduated about 3 months after they had arrested him. So he was charged to belonging to a student organization, three years ago, after he had graduated. I know it sounds very silly, it sounds ridiculous, but unfortunately, that's our reality.
And how long has he been in jail now?
He's been in jail for 8 months now. He was sentenced after 6 months of jail. He was there for 6 months. We didn't know why. And his trial kept on being postponed. And he was finally sentenced to 10 months in jail. He's been in there for 8 months now, so he should be out by another two, hopefully.
And
they didn't specify what the activities were.
Has your family been able to talk to him or see him since?
We've been able to see him during his court appearances. And my mother can visit him. I'm not allowed to visit the jails. We need to get a permission slip to visit, and I've been denied a visit for allegedly security reasons.
And he can't have.
So I'm only allowed to visit him once a year.
Once a year, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know if he's ever been tortured at all in jail?
This time he wasn't, but last time he was arrested, which was in 2008. Even though his allegations are from that time, he was in their jails. Also, then he was interrogated for 40 days, and he was subjected to physical and mental torture. And by the time he was in jail for 6 months at the time, he came back out and found it extremely hard to concentrate. He couldn't sleep very well either, and these are just side effects of occupation. Unfortunately, it takes sometimes for the prisoners, when they get out, to just fit back into society, not because society had changed, but because of their mindset.
I don't think Israeli jails are famous for rehabilitation.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I don't think that's their strong suit. And you know, even here in our country, in the United States, I am ashamed to admit this, has the largest incarceration rate of any Western country in the world. Fortunately, we do understand the nature of rehabilitation. You know, they claim we're all terrorists. They don't want to rehabilitate us, so they must want more terrorists. I think it suits their needs, but that's neither here nor there. I am very sorry to hear that your brother is in jail, and I pray that he will be released soon and without further duress onto him.
We
have a question from Sam from New York City. Sam would like to know if you could name some of the items that are allowed by students to take through checkpoints.
In terms of, like, what do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I guess there must be some contraband items that are not allowed, obviously weaponry, I mean, or anything that
usually
might.
Only,
but are there things that are, I mean, are you allowed to carry your books? Are you allowed to carry food? Are you allowed to carry personal products across checkpoints?
We had to have whatever was necessary for that day or that week, because we would never know if we're going to be able to go back or not, if the checkpoint would be closed. Most of the students would have just books and notebooks in their school bags, but a lot of times, while being searched, the books would be thrown on the ground and stepped on and ripped, and sometimes they'd even throw the whole bag into the mud. And it wasn't for security, it was just for humiliation.
Yes.
And what you were saying a little bit earlier about rehabilitation, Israeli jails are not for rehabilitation, they're for punishment.
Exactly.
And you can't really rehabilitate anyone that doesn't have a problem. I mean,
what are you going to do, rehabilitate a student and make him a non-student? I don't understand the principles. And we are being facetious here, but this is certainly not a laughing matter. People are being tortured in those prisons. They have on the military books in Israeli, the Israeli military has actual torture techniques for children, which include the shaking of the head, putting feces in a bag and putting it over the face of children, keeping them in the dark, keeping them, you know, in situations that are uncomfortable and discomforting for them. I mean, these are actually on military books in the military jails, and that's a terrifying thought. That,
and these are just the physical abuses. The mental abuses are just as much, and are even worse. Like a lot of times, they would tell children that they were going to arrest the child's mother or violate his mother in a sexual content or physical abuse, and would say the same about other family members. So,
Or kill them.
They would say they would kill his parents or imprison them or hurt them in any way. And a lot of times they'd have other people screaming in the next cell so they could scare the children. And dog barks, and they just have so many different ways of doing it. It's despicable.
Yes, and there is no real surveillance in terms of what's happening in these prisons. These children are under the age of 18, and it's under human rights laws. This is a huge violation. But unfortunately, people admit that what Israel as a state, as an apartheid state, is doing is a violation. But there hasn't been any real measures taken to stop the actions of the Israeli occupation. If there was,
And what do you want to? Let me ask you both. What do you want to see happen from this tour? From is it just awareness that you would like to see happen?
Excuse me. Is it what?
Is it just awareness?
Awareness.
Right now, for us, awareness is probably the most important element here. I mean, our problem is with Zionism and with oppression, but also there's a lot of ignorance in the world towards this oppression. People don't know what's happening. So we see awareness as a very important element in the situation, especially in the United States. I mean, in European countries, people have known about the Palestinian struggle for a while now and have been trying to advocate for equal rights and for a stop to the occupation and a stop to the cruelty happening. Whereas in the United States, it's starting to happen slowly. And the media you have over here doesn't really help. I mean, I've seen Fox News and CNN cover stories back home that were just, they've done it in a way that is really sickening, and twist the truth around and give it to the audience here. And this has been happening for decades. Mm-hmm. So I think right now our main job is to educate the people and tell them about our lives. You know, we're not saying anything that the politicians are saying. We're just going around on a campus tour and on radios and telling people how we live, you know, just saying personal stories of how it was like getting an education under occupation.
And have you had any experiences on these campuses with people that have either been pro or against what your statements are?
Well, basically, just to elaborate a bit on what Hannah's saying, before I go to that question, but this is what we're doing here, like for the past about 4 weeks, has been a relationship, building a relationship with the masses, making a conversation with other people regarding what Palestine means, or what do you see when you see a Palestinian? What does it mean? So it's basically starting a conversation, but also saying we're not going to stop there. There has to be something beyond education, which is organization and mobilization, and also promoting the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement that has been so successful in South Africa and has been becoming very successful in Palestine as putting pressure on the Israeli occupation, because Israel's biggest fear is losing its facade, losing its face, its democratic face. So if people are putting pressure on them because they know about the occupation, it causes a huge, how do you call it, like a huge movement. So other than education, like what we're hoping to do is to invite people, not politicians, not business people, no, people like us, students, working class people, educators, to be with us in our fights against oppression, as the people of America have been with the people of South Africa and elsewhere during times like this. But as for your second question, not really. I think people, there are people who are pro-Israeli and there are people who are pro-Zionist who have asked questions. But then again, questions that had a very big political content in terms of what do you see happening or what is the future. And it's how you were just trying to see, to end the occupation first as an attempt. This is an attempt to actually educate in order to promote ending the occupation somehow. So, of course, there have been questions, there have been challenging questions, but we're managing quite well. It hasn't been too bad.
I'm sure you are. You're both very articulate, and your English skills are remarkable. Mike in California would like to ask a question. He asked, do Hanna and Mira think that President Obama can help the people of Palestine, or do they feel he is no different than President Bush?
Well, we're not experts, unfortunately, in the U.S. political internal politics, but I think President Obama was obvious where he stood when the U.S. vetoed a U.N. resolution about the building of legal settlements inside of the West Bank. And these settlements are legal in accordance to international law and accordance to UN resolutions. And the U.S. was vetoed that resolution, which means that, you know, Israel, as always, is above international law when it comes down to these things because of the U.S. foreign policy. They have as much support as they need, and AIPAC and other Zionist organizations put a lot of pressure on the White House. And I guess the White House presidential candidates all rely on these people for money and donations. So I guess that's how it works in a system like this. You know, they support the people that give them the money to run for presidency or for office.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. Unfortunately, this administration has once again let the ball drop on a solution. And speaking of solutions, let me ask you, there's been a lot of incredible upheaval, revolution, and amazing, amazing events that are going on in the Middle East today. How has that reflected on your positions as Palestinians in a territory that has never been friendly and suddenly has the potential to be? What is happening in Palestine in accordance to that?
In Palestine at the moment, after the revolutions in Tunis and Egypt and Libya and Yemen, I think I'll speak of it from a youth perspective. It's given us hope as a youth in terms of, yes, you can get rid of corrupt regimes. You know, if you asked anyone before, do you think that Mubarak would have left, people would have said no. He wouldn't have left that. But the strength of the people and the determination has allowed it. So it has pushed the Palestinian youth movement as is to actually start working together, thinking together, and organizing together. As for internationally and locally in the Middle East, I mean, as you know, Palestine is the belly button of the Middle East. And I do not know how much we would be influenced, but hopefully that the new regimes or the new people in power that will come into these countries will actually try and make a difference. But we have to also, when we talk about that, we have to think about the U.S. involvement in it. The U.S. is a huge donation giver to Arab regimes, and a lot of the Arab world was dependent on American aid from before, and as well as Palestine and Israel. But to look at it, I mean, to have a real change in the Middle East, to have a real change in Palestine, the American government at the moment, Obama is no different than Bush or anyone before him, because he is still giving military aid to Israel that is being giving money basically to warmongers, dropping bombs on children and homes. Basically, but the real change needs to come from the people with the money, from the people with the power, and basically the main supporter of the Israeli occupation, which is the United States. So, if that starts to happen, I think a lot of more change will happen. I don't know.
I think what happened in the Arab world, as far as the revolutions in Tunisia and Egypt, and the ones in Bahrain and Yemen, aren't just good for the Palestinians. It's not just good for the Arabs, it's good for everyone around the world. I mean, it's just people that are fighting oppression. It's the oppressed against the oppressor. And the Arabic street, the people in these countries are sick of their puppet governments, they're sick of the oppression from these governments, and they just had enough. They have had enough. And for your information, I'm sure you know this, but maybe not many viewers know that Israel is the main benefactor of U.S. foreign aid. And Egypt number two right after Israel.
I'll tell you one thing, my listeners know.
Yeah, your listeners know, right? So, I mean, Egypt, the Egyptian regime of Hosni Mubarak was getting the second most funding by the U.S. after Israel. And that actually says a lot. It says that we want to keep this region stable, and you're the people to do it for us, and here's a whole bunch of money, and do whatever needs to be done. We'll keep you on your seat.
Do you think peace is ever going, under the circumstances, this presidency and this administration is no different than any of the predecessors, under the circumstances, do you see a peace negotiation being possible in between Palestine and Israel?
Right now, we don't, because the mediator between the two sides is the U.S., is the White House. And when you have a broker that is an unfair broker, then you're going to get an unfair deal. And that's basically what it is right now.
And peace can only be created with justice and human rights and equality and freedom for all in the region. You cannot have a peaceful solution without having equal rights and justice and dignity for everyone. And in Palestine at the moment, the Palestinians living in their little enclaves and their little cantons and Bantustans cannot stand for a peaceful agreement. What sort of peace can we create living in two huge prisons, actually three huge prisons, one in the West Bank, one in the Gaza Strip, and one in East Jerusalem, and then having the majority of the Palestinian population in the diaspora and living in the slums of the refugee camps in Lebanon and Syria and Jordan and Egypt? That's not fair to anyone.
Also, people treat us and Israelis as two equal sides, since we have a Palestinian Authority. And that is just unfair, because our Palestinian Authority doesn't have much say in what happens in the occupied territories and in the whole region. They really don't have any power other than the power they have over the Palestinian people.
Well, the Palestinian Authority was originally set up during Oslo not for the protection of the Palestinians, but for the protection of the Israelis against the Palestinians. So they have never had any power right from the very beginning.
Exactly.
And that wasn't given to them by Israel.
Unfair. That's why I say it's unfair when the whole world treats us as two equals, as two partners in peace. We're not equal. We're under occupation. We don't have a right in things. That's why these negotiations will not work, is because pretty much just like Oslo, we got our leadership was forced to do it and were given false promises. I mean, I am not a supporter of Oslo. I never have been, and I never will be. But the Palestinian Authority...
Where am I?
But the Palestinian Authority lived up to their end of the deal, and that's something that the occupation has not done. And the politicians in the Palestinian Authority have been warned by other Palestinians from the very beginning about these phony peace deals. I mean, it's just like when you compare it to what was happening here with the settlers, European settlers, and the Native Americans. Fake treaties, fake
slaughters, massacres happening everywhere, and fake peace treaties, and at the end, they kicked out the indigenous people and took over their land, and that's what's happening back home.
If let me ask you both this. If you could choose a leader from the people, who would you choose?
I would choose a woman. I think we need a woman president at the moment.
Amen, sister.
As a leader, I think we need to, I think the women in Palestine are so strong. They are the mothers, they are the educators, they are the doctors, and they are the ones who shape the society. Really. I mean, with the men, but they also have a huge role to play in the upbringing of everyone. And I think if we have a female president, I would like to see a female president. I would like to see a strong female president who is calling for the full rights, for the full rights of the Palestinian people. We just have to find her. So if she's listening, I think she should give me a call.
Me personally, I don't, I mean, anyone that is in control of the Palestinian Authority would change right away, because whoever is in charge will have to go with whatever he or she is told, because the PA is not in the position of strength. So in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, no one else's, we could only have a true leadership when the people, first of all, are united, and second of all, when our leaders are not dependent on foreign aid. Because as soon as they're dependent on foreign aid, then they're going to have to also take into consideration and implement what the funders want them to do.
So well, I have to agree with you that it is certainly a dilemma, and you are absolutely right. The Palestinian Authority is in no position to bargain with anyone. They don't have any power. They're a powerless entity in the region. And when their power is granted them, it's granted to them by their perceived enemy. So that's a nonsensical position right there.
Exactly.
I mean, it would be like, I can't think of an analogy for something to be so ridiculous. But anyway, it is unfortunate, and here you are. Two graduates of one of the best universities in the Middle East, and you're on tour. Can you tell us about the tour and where it'll be taking you?
Sure. After Albuquerque, we are going to Tucson, Phoenix, San Diego, and finish off in Los Angeles.
So for anybody that's there in these cities, is there a website that you guys have that we can put out there?
Sure. It's www.jewishvoiceforpeace.org, and there's another website called www.wedivest.org, and there are the dates and the venues for the tour. If people are interested or have the time to come and have a conversation with us, that would be wonderful.
We welcome as many people as possible. It's not they're not closed-door events. Everyone's invited. Even if you don't agree with us, we'd like you to come and talk about it. I'm sure respectful dialogue can take place regardless of who's there.
In a couple of minutes or less, can you talk to us about what your voices of divestment are in support of these days?
Divestment. Well, I'll just go back a little bit to 2005 when the National Boycott Committee started the call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And basically it calls for equal rights, ending the occupation, and having a fair peace and a just peace for all. And it's been taking off very much since then. The one that Jewish Voice for Peace is promoting at the moment is a divestment from five companies that TIAA Crest, the pension fund, is investing in at the moment. These companies all benefit from the occupation of the Palestinian people. I'll just give an example of two of them. Caterpillar are bulldozers that bulldoze down the homes of Palestinians and uproot the olive trees. Veolia is a train company, and they are building a train a land train at the moment that connects occupied East Jerusalem to the settlement, the illegal settlement, Jewish-only settlements in the West Bank. And there's a lot of money invested in this. So we're not asking in this divestment that we're calling TIA aircraft to divest from. We're not asking people to boycott TIA aircraft themselves. We're asking them to support us in calling for them to divest from these companies that benefit from the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories. And they are also for the pensions for educators and people who work in universities and NGOs and hospitals and community initiatives. So they listen to the people, and we are hoping that we can make a real change with something even this small.
And there you have it, folks. Please follow this couple, Mira Dabit and Hannah Cassis. If you have the opportunity to go to one of the cities that they'll be speaking in, we've given you the websites. You can go to our website, www.thepeoplespeakradio.com, and find out more information. Good luck to you both.
Thank you.
Long live Palestine. I pray for peace every day for Palestine. I am from Ramallah, so just so you both know. I was born in the West Bank in Ramallah and came to this country and was raised in the United States. So it is a blessing to see incredible young people like you doing the work that needs to be done. Thank you, and good luck to you. Our guest next week will be Kevin Annette. And as the people always say, let the people speak. When the people speak, we make a difference. So you two, go out and make a difference.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.